Hello, this is Patrick Neiman from usabilitycounts.com. This is the second podcast that we're doing, and today we have on Hillary Beanstock. Is that the correct pronunciation?
Yes, it is.
Okay. So what Hillary is a user experience consultant based out of Los Angeles, California, and her focus, her main focus is on user research, but Hillary, go ahead and tell me more about what you like doing.
Well, so as you said, Patrick, I'm a consultant, and my goal is to help companies figure out who their users are going to be. So as Patrick said, I do research, and really I can do any kind of research to help you understand who's going to be using your product and how it's working for them, I guess, is the other thing that I should say. So if at the beginning of the product you're saying, well, we know that we want to target women from age 30 to 54, but we don't really know what types of content they're interested in, that's a problem that I could help you with. If on the other hand you say, well, we built this site for women age 35 to 54 who are interested in this, I could help you figure out if the site is actually helping these women achieve the goals that you wanted it to. So I can work with people before they begin the design process or after they've got some designs that they want to take a look at.
So in a lot of ways, I mean, and this is just to clarify, make sure the audience understands it, and this is something I've seen in previous places I've worked at. You know, we bring in user researchers at the very beginning to help define what the product is, because knowing those users is very important. And then maybe like a couple of weeks before, or like a month before the product is launched, doing another usability test, for example, do another report that actually puts users through the process, and then you can see the holes in the product and correct them hopefully before launch, or maybe correct them on a 2.0 product, correct?
Absolutely. And there's two points that I want to make. And the first one is that some people who don't know a lot about user research say, okay, well, we need a usability test, and they wait until the end. And in a lot of cases, I think that that's really a mistake, because if the first time you get to user research is at a usability test, a lot of times some of the problems that we'll uncover are things that are, you know, really difficult problems to fix at that point in the process, because there are problems that have been made with assumptions about the users and what they want, what they need, what they will respond to. And the other thing is that I know that it sounds very intensive what you're talking about, Patrick, to bring in a researcher before the design happens and to bring in a researcher afterwards, but I want to emphasize that research doesn't have to be expensive. It's going out and talking to people, and a lot of times people will be very happy to talk to you, especially, like, for example, if you're working on a B2B product and people have to use your product because their company uses it, people will be so happy to talk to a researcher about their frustrations with the way they do things now. They will be delighted. I mean, this won't cost you very much at all.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. It's basically, a lot of it is based on, you know, first it's personas, now there's the whole, you know, ethnographic studies as far as the research, right? And you talk about there are really easy ways to do it that aren't so expensive. I mean, one of the clients that I worked with was the municipality of Anchorage, and they're going to be launching their site soon, but they were redesigning their website, and one of the things that was interesting about that project is we were able to do that and to write the personas, and because we were actually up there for a couple of weeks in the middle of winter, we kind of got to see how their life is like, and they actually dump on us, like, we're talking like reams of reports and surveys that they had already done. So not only were we interviewing people, you know, stakeholders or just different people in the community, but we also had all this numbers data to start with, and we even used like Wikipedia, for example, to do research. So there are all these tools, like you said, that are out there that are inexpensive but can provide you a lot of valuable information about your customer base.
Absolutely. And I mean, if you really want to go the route of reading lots of reports, there are Pew reports about what Americans are doing in their free time, because a lot of times the most difficult type of user to get to know is your sort of general mass market consumer, and there's been a lot of free work done on them that you can access.
So let's suppose I was to bring in on a contract, and I wanted to find out. I had a product idea, for example, like I wanted to make widgets. What would be the steps in the process that you would go through to bring in people for interviews and that kind of just put together like a 3 or 4 step process that you go through to do that initial market study?
Okay. Well, you're already making some assumptions that I would caution you not to make. Like you said, I want to bring in some people for interviews, but it really depends on what kind of widgets you're trying to make. If you're making something that people are going to use at home, maybe you can go out to their home. So basically the first step that I would do in the process is I would talk to you about what you're trying to build, what your business goals are, and what you know or what you think you know already about your users. And then I would help you to understand, kind of really crystallize, what are your questions. And then once we know what those questions are, I'll put together a plan for a study that will answer those questions, whether that's bringing people into the lab, whether that's looking up market research that's already been done, whether that's going out to people's homes to find out what those, to answer those questions, to learn about those people. And then once I've done that, and you're the client, and obviously if you want to hire me and then get a report back in 2 weeks, that's fine, but I would encourage you to participate in the research as much as possible. So if I'm bringing people in, maybe you can, you know, be in on those interviews in some way. If I'm going out to their homes, maybe you can come with me, because you really learn a lot from interacting with your potential users yourself, especially if you're really listening and not saying, what if we built this? Would you like it? What if we built that? Would you like it? But if you're really listening to what they're saying about what they do now and what they think about it, you can learn a lot. And then once we've done that research, I would write it up, present it to you, and together we would work on kind of what the recommendations are, what the steps forward are based on what we've learned about the users. I would probably at that point want to help you build some personas that could be a very small effort if that's what we feel is appropriate for the size of the project, just to help you sort of crystallize, because, you know, we've done a lot of research, and that helps you to say, instead of being like, well, we think our users are going to be between 25 and 45 years old, you can say, okay, so it's going to be this 27-year-old guy, and here's what he likes to do in his spare time, and here's how he's going to use this product. That really helps everybody on the team sort of crystallize their understanding.
So in a lot of ways, like when as far as the crystallizing and understanding, you help clients really target their products, you know, their websites, and basically say to them, look, you can't be targeting everybody. So these are the people that we think that if you target the product to this, you'll get the best ROI as far as building out a product and that kind of approach, correct?
Yes, definitely. And it's a big mistake that companies can make to say, like, I want this to appeal to everyone. Well, of course, you know, you do want your site to appeal to everybody, but a lot of times if you try to do that, it's not targeted towards anybody, and that's not a very good approach. So by being more targeted, you'll actually come out with a much better product.
Okay, so we got the process down. I think I'm going through my list of notes here of what we were going to talk about. I mean, one of the things he kind of hit upon is basically doing these studies on the cheap. Now, from my understanding, like hiring, when you use, like there's a usability lab over in Santa Monica that I once went to, and basically using that lab, it was like $5,000 or $10,000 a day. And they provided the subjects for you based off of a list that they had. But one of the ironies is, like, in the middle of the usability study, one of the other people that was in the room said, oh, I recognize that guy. The guy literally he just made like $100 a study and would come in whenever, and he was in there all the time for all these different software packages. But a lot of companies, they don't have $50,000, $100,000 to spend on a study, nor do they have the money to hire somebody full-time. So let's say that they bring you in, you know, what are some things that you can do to kind of mitigate the expense of doing a study like this, but still provide a very effective report at the end?
Well, for one thing, you're talking about going out to a facility, and those places are really expensive, and a lot of what you're paying for is like food in the back room while you're observing, which is great if you can afford it, but it's certainly not a necessary part of doing the study. It's really easy to bring people into your office or to go to their house or to go somewhere else quiet. So that's part of the expense that you can cut out. You can definitely sort of keep down the recruit. If you really need to, you can do a recruit by asking your friends or asking people on Craigslist. And then, you know, depending on who you're bringing in, so one part of the expense would be the facility, which definitely isn't necessary. Another part of the expense would be recruiting people, and that, if you can do it through word of mouth, it's probably, you'll get slightly better test subjects if you use a recruiter, I won't lie to you, but if the difference between doing a study and not doing a study is whether or not you can afford the recruit, then it's still worth it to bring in some of your friends and friends of friends. And then another expense is you have to give these people something, and that there, it sort of depends on who you're bringing in and how much they need for their time. So if you need to interview like high-powered financial executives, you probably need to give them a lot for it to be worth their time to come and sit in your lab for an hour. Well, maybe not anymore, but traditionally it would be. But on the other hand, if your product is something that's aimed at college students, they'd probably be pretty happy to come in and do it for like, you know, $15 on Amazon and a slice of pizza or whatever. So that really depends. And then another, well, not to be too self-aggrandizing, but hiring an individual rather than a big consulting company can also really cut down on your budget.
Yeah, and this is we had a previous conversation before the podcast. One of the examples I was talking about with Hillary was I worked at a company where we had no budget for this. Literally, it was me as a product manager bringing in five people off of Craigslist, videotaping them myself and watching the video after. And even with such a low budget production, or bringing in somebody like Hillary to just do that specifically, the insights that I got from the product not only helped make the product a better product, but because of it, it helped improve the profitability of the company. So
absolutely.
Yeah, it's definitely something. It's definitely something that, you know, everybody should be doing. Now, the other thing I would like to point out is like a lot of us, a lot of IAs in LA, for example, they tend to be the only user experience person in an agency. You know, a lot of agencies here are in the, they're basically in the like the 10-person, the 40-person range. So a lot of them can't support a full-time IA. So what do you recommend for somebody in that situation where they know they aren't going to be able to do a lot of research, and there's always going to be this constant demand of, you know, we just got to get it out the door?
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say research doesn't have to take a long time. It can be done really fast. I mean, obviously, I think that you will get a huge ROI on doing it. If you could only do one study, I would say while you're going into product planning or a week before product planning, go out and talk to some of your users. That's what's going to give you the most bang for your buck, because then you know you're designing this thing that actually meets their needs. If you can do two studies, and so I emphasize this is definitely not going to have to take you longer than a week. I mean, it can take longer if that's what you want, but it doesn't have to. It can be done really quickly, and it can be done while you're getting other parts of the product set up. So you're setting up your sprint, and maybe you're building some of the back-end infrastructure that you need at the same time as you're going out and talking to some of your users about exactly which of the features they need, but you know that there are some parts you can already start on. So I would urge you to do it. You can do it fast. You can do it cheap. You can do it easily. It doesn't sound like a good ad for me, but I think it's a good idea.
Yeah. So basically, even if you spend like a few days or a week just establishing, hey, this is who you're going after, that's much better than not doing it at all, correct?
Absolutely. Yes, definitely.
So one of the other things that we really wanted to touch on during this conversation was that there's targeting based on age group. For example, let's suppose it's a product where you're targeting, you know, white females 35 to 54, or, you know, teenagers that are like 15 to 23, for example. But that's not necessarily the only way that you could target users. And so what are some examples that you've used in the past at other companies to kind of ferret out the behavioral targeting?
Well, yeah, so it is important, definitely for a marketer, for an advertiser, it's really important to know the demographics of your target, and that, you know, has to do with gender and age and maybe geographically where they live. But for the user experience, a lot of times it's much more important to know about people behaviorally. So when I was at LA Times, we did a lot of work on trying to understand how people read news online. And it turns out that there are some people who want to read everything that comes through online. It's really important for them to get through the whole thing. And then there are other people who have certain topics that they're interested in, and they'll kind of search on those topics. And so, you know, if you're an LA Times reader who wants to get through the whole thing and you're a loyalist, you're most likely to be one of these people who wants to get through the whole thing. So then we know that we can design the homepage for you to make it easier for you to navigate, sort of read your way through the website the way you might read your way through a newspaper. So that's one example of what kind of behaviorally you might want to be looking for. Another example is when I was at Yahoo and we were working on building a website for video game players. Well, we knew that they were probably male. They were probably between ages, like, say, 15 and 34. But what we didn't know was, what kind of information are they looking for online? Why are they playing video games? You know, because the Yahoo site wasn't going to be providing video games to them. It was going to be providing to them information about video games. So what are these people currently doing to get information about video games online? What kind of information are they looking for? What kind of information do they not care about? So by going out to their houses and just looking at their setups and what's important to them, we were able to learn a lot about what the Yahoo site should and shouldn't include in terms of information that would appeal to them.
So, for example, in that situation, you were able to determine not only were they, you know, what kind of games that they were playing, but you were determining that, oh yeah, they're going to IGN for some of their video game news, or they're going to GameSpy, for example, correct? So you're doing some,
well, not even that so much.
Little bit of, go ahead, sorry.
But kind of like for example, what we found among the people that we talked to was they're really not as interested in cheat codes because that's taking away from their enjoyment of playing the games, but high resolution screenshots and especially video trailers are hugely important to them when they're looking up video game content. That's much more important than a review, for example. So then we knew that's the content you have to feature, whereas having the cheat codes isn't probably something that Yahoo should focus on.
Oh, that's kind of interesting. So.
Yeah. So and I'm sure that this doesn't represent...
Go ahead. Sorry.
It doesn't represent 100% of video gamers, but, you know, from the sampling that we did, and I should emphasize that it was a small sample study, it was 7 people, we learned that this was not something that was most important to them.
Now that's kind of interesting. Those are the little details. I mean, a lot of it, we do this with broad strokes because we don't have the resources to do this. But those are the little details that can have a really, really huge impact on the design of a site.
Definitely.
Right.
And they're not expensive. Going out to people's homes and talking to a few of them, I mean, as few as, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 people, you can really learn a lot.
Okay. Well, anything else that you want to add? We're kind of at the end of our time.
No, it's been a pleasure, Patrick.
Okay, so that's been the second podcast over at usabilitycounts.com. This was Patrick Neiman with Hillary Beanstalk. And is that correct again? Did I mess it up?
That's it.
Okay. And next week we're going to be having another podcast. I'm still working on scheduling the guest. I'm hoping it's Ambrose Little of Infradistics, but we'll see how that goes. So look forward to next week. Thank you very much, and visit the site.